Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
Speaking broadly, the difference between animal health, or at least companion animal health, versus human health is really only one pivotal safety and efficacy study is required to get approval, as opposed to the so-called phase 1, 2, 3 approach that would be normally required of FDA's.
Welcome to Ag Bioscience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Here is your host, Agrinova CEO, Mitch Fraser.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. Grandview Research estimates the global animal health market to be roughly $8 billion, a number the analyst firm expects will grow 10% compound annual growth rate through 2030. Much of that growth driven by biotech. Here to help us understand what is happening in the biotech market, specifically as it relates to companion animals, is an entrepreneur, an innovator, and a bold visionary for the future of animal health. Welcome Dr. Todd Zion, CEO and founder of Axton Biosciences. Todd, welcome to Ag Bioscience.
Hi, Mitch. Thanks for having me.
I'm elated to spend some time with you today to understand this market that is growing rapidly as we look at biotech as it relates to animal health, specifically in the companion animal space. Give us an idea. Help us orient here before we jump in. What is this companion animal health market and how is it evolving?
I think companion animals, we generally think of dogs and cats, although I think horses at times can be included in this. And I think all you have to do is kind of take a walk in the park down the road these days to see just how many pet owners there are, at least for dogs. And they've just really become part of our families. It's a generational thing. I think, you know, maybe 25, 30 years ago, sometimes the animals were living outside and now they're really part of the family. So I think people are really tuned in to their livelihoods and also their physical health. And they're willing to spend their precious dollars on making sure that their animals are well taken care of. And I think that's one of the, you know, larger trends that's been happening, say, in the last 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, you look at the wind that is in the sail of Axton. One of those has to be this growing population and this growing focus on companion animals. You made some giant headlines back in late 2024 as you're continuing this work in canine oncology, partnership with Purdue University, their School of Veterinary Medicine. Give us an idea of what that therapeutic is and where are we in the discovery cycle there?
Maybe just taking a step back. So one of the biggest revolutions in human health for cancer has been these sort of immunotherapeutics, as they're called. So basically medicines that are targeted at how the immune system deals with cancer. So for those of you who aren't as familiar, cancer has a very good way of evading being attacked by the immune system. Normally, the immune system would go after things that are growing rapidly and invading our bodies. So they present on their surfaces and the cells these certain signals that kind of silence the immune system. And so many medicines have been developed in human health that have been quite successful to go after this mechanism. You may have heard of Keytruda, which is a Merck product that targets something called the PD-1 receptor. There's others that target the PD-L1, which is the other part of this. In any event, the researchers at Purdue have thought about, okay, well, let's think about adapting this to take advantage of the same mechanism, but in dogs. And they've developed something called a monoclonal antibody for doing that, that is specifically designed for dogs. And this fits really well with our biotech development platform and our focus in on companion animal health. So when we found out about this, we sort of joined up. And one of the key things that we were bringing to the table that Purdue was lacking was this ability to manufacture on fairly large scale this novel biotech product so that they could actually start their clinical studies, which have now started going back to October, November timeframe. So it's been a really rapid but mutually beneficial relationship that started between the two entities.
So glad you walked through how these drugs work. I want to spend a little time on that mechanism because I think it's important for people to understand, again, whether it's human health or animal health, we're focused on animal health here. But you talk a lot in your literature online, the website, around precision proteins. Walk us through the path from precision proteins to immunotherapies.
The first thing you have to do is identify the target that you're trying to go after. So as I mentioned, on the surface of cancer cells, they present a very specific target called PD-L1. And that's different for dogs and humans and cats for that matter. So the first thing is that you have to design your binder, the thing that's going after it, to be very specific for that target. The second thing is that the part of this antibody that kind of gives it its function is different for dogs and humans and cats as well. So you have to not only make this thing specific for the dog cancer molecule, but you also have to make it recognized as being part of the dog's own physiology and not recognized as foreign. So they refer to this as caninized, if you will, so made to be used in dogs. So that's kind of the precision component of it. And then there's other ways kind of going forward from there, which is, okay, manufacturing, you've got to find the right cell line to make these. You've got to make them with a high enough yield. And also for us, cost is a big deal. So in human health, oftentimes these therapies will cost hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And it's simply not within anyone, or at least most people's realm of possibility to spend that. So we have to add this extra layer of innovation, which is making sure that we can get these innovative therapies made cost effectively so we don't break the bank when they finally get out there to the people and the animals that need them most.
That complex labyrinth is one that is truly astounding as you look not only moving and advancing this canine oncology therapy, but you're doing a lot of work across companion animal. You have a feline obesity, I believe, a product that's working its way through pipeline. Give us a sense of what else is in the Axton pipeline.
The first thing is that there are a number of different verticals or different market applications, but they do actually rely on all the same underlying technology. So the idea is to take the business end of an antibody and make it specific for the animals and then go in and engineer specific targets. So one of the things that antibodies do really well is that they circulate for long periods of time. That's part of their function in the immune system. So if you can kind of adapt that function and attach it to a molecule that is actually used for treating a disease, you can make them much longer acting. So one of our product categories that was recently acquired by Dechra Pharmaceuticals is a long-acting insulin for treating diabetes in dogs and a separate one for cats. And these last once a week, or it can be administered once a week as opposed to twice a day. And so that underlying technology we've adapted for what I guess is best described as the Ozempic revolution, but these GLP-1s that have become so fashionable these days in human health for treating obesity, you can take advantage of that same mechanism in dogs and cats. And so we decided to start with cats in this particular situation and make it a long-acting cat-specific GLP-1. And we're working with Cornell University on that one. We've gone through the safety studies and pharmacology, and hopefully in the next month or so, we'll actually be going into the client-owned animals and showing that it's efficacious and safe in that population.
Such an incredible bastion of work that you're advancing, of innovation. Todd, we're going to dig into what's ahead for biotech and companion animal and how it relates to human health. We'll do it right after this. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
A healthy company is a blessing, but a well-insured company is a necessity. That's why Indiana Farm Bureau offers more affordable health plans for eligible members. Whether you have just a handful of employees or a larger enterprise, building a stable business demands employees who are just as strong and healthy. Indiana Farm Bureau can help with health plans that include medical, dental, vision, and Medicare supplement insurance plans. And you can sign up for membership and apply for an Indiana Farm Bureau health plan any time of year. Indiana Farm Bureau understands the cost of healthcare has rapidly become one of the largest expenses for many small businesses. We invite you to compare our health plans to your current coverage. We're confident you could find significant savings. To learn more about the health plan that's right for you, visit infbhealthplans.com and make the switch today.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. Talking with Dr. Todd Zion, the CEO founder of Axon Biosciences. Todd, we've been talking a lot about the innovation you're advancing, and you've described it a couple times as a platform. Talk more about how you view this bastion of innovation focused on precision proteins and this work in companion animals.
It goes back to my point about cost effectiveness while being innovative. And one of the big challenges with antibodies, and one reason why our pipeline is expanding beyond that, is that they do require a very large manufacturing footprint, and they're not very cheap to manufacture. And the amount of material you need to dose is pretty significant. So that all kind of combines to being a more expensive and oftentimes fairly rigorous or difficult to administer therapy. So in the pipeline, our platform allows us to create antibodies within the dogs or cats themselves. So using a very small amount of material, we can produce the same effect. And in doing so, we can establish a much more cost-effective platform and cut down on the number of treatments. And so even though we're going with the Purdue technology initially, we have some pipeline products that seek to achieve the same goal with a lot less material. And so from our standpoint, that's the way we see the future of biotechnology, is that last level of innovation, which is coming up with technology that allows you to achieve really stark results, but for a much smaller investment amount and a lower cost of goods.
And you've been a pioneer in this space. I mean, you personally have been a pioneer in this space. I look back to the work you led with Smart Insulin, the acquisition 2010 to Merck, if I remember correctly. Todd, as you look at this and you look at your pioneering work in biotech, how does the work in human health that you've pioneered manifest itself now in animal health? And are there more opportunities that you see on the table that you go, gosh, if we could just connect these two sides, animal and human, we could be even further along?
It starts with this kind of One Health idea, which is not new, and I'm certainly not the pioneer in that, but there are a number of diseases that are shared between humans and our furry friends. You know, cancer is one of them we talked about. Diabetes is another one we talked about. Obesity's there. Chronic pain, dermatitis, inflammation. I mean, the list goes on and on. And so from the standpoint of drug development, even going back to that first company, we explored the idea of dogs and cats in diabetes to be sort of these ways to step down risk and develop another set of verticals. It was too expensive at that time to do it, and it got us too distracted. But learning from that and coming back to it at Axton, that allowed us to kind of think about ways in which we can expand. And honestly, for me, going forward, I would love to see medicines developed that way. So going from our furry friends and developing medicines from them and learning from that and then advancing them to people. I think right now it's going at, you know, the opposite direction. And I think that that's very inefficient for this industry.
Well, regulatory, clearly a challenging component of that, a headwind or a tailwind, I guess, depending on how you look at it. How is it different? The regulatory environment, I mean, clearly there's different agencies involved, but just the path to product. And then if you could, maybe as part of that, help us understand when we can begin to see some of these Axton products, maybe in our local veterinarian office.
So there are actually two regulatory agencies for the biotech products, as opposed to just one in human, which would be the FDA. So the FDA does regulate some biotech products through their Center of Veterinary Medicine. And then the USDA, Department of Agriculture, actually regulates things through their Center for Veterinary Biologics. And there are a lot of nuances there as to which one is chosen, which we don't necessarily have to go into. The regulations are fairly similar between the two agencies. So speaking broadly, the difference between animal health, or at least companion animal health, versus human health is really only one pivotal safety and efficacy study is required to get approval, as opposed to the so-called phase 1, 2, 3 approach that would be normally required of FDA. So a lot less clinical trial evidence is required. However, on the manufacturing front, it's almost exactly the same. And so in a strange way, in human health, manufacturing is never the long bar in the Gantt chart because you have all these clinical trials to go through. But actually in animal health, it could end up being your long bar because you only have to really run this one study. So at Axton, one of the things we recognize is investing in that manufacturing expertise and infrastructure early on so that we're not finding ourselves having really interesting clinical data and then spending another 5 years to develop the commercial manufacturing. We're really doing that in parallel. And I think this oncology product for dog bladder cancer is a great example. You know, we hope to be approved conditionally through the USDA by 2027, which is only a couple of years from now. Part of that is because we're leveraging certainly all the great work that's done at Purdue, but also because we've gained so much experience in manufacturing these kinds of molecules that we'll already be ready to manufacture large-scale batches, even going to the end of this calendar year. So yeah, we're super excited about that. And then the cadence is going to be sort of every couple of years after that, we'll see a new product launch. Yeah, it's an exciting time for us to be doing what we're doing and also get these products out to the veterinary clinics as soon as possible.
Clearly demand is there, and now it's about bringing supply and demand together, right?
For sure. And again, doing it at an affordable price and at scale, which is really important.
Todd, one of my favorite books that I've been plowing through is a book by Clayton Christensen called Competing Against Luck. And in that book, he talks about jobs to be done and what will people pull into their lives, right, as they think about product selection. As you look at this companion animal market specifically, what are the jobs that need to be done that aren't being done today, right? Where you feel like there is greenfield that, gosh, we just need to go get this job done.
I think that the one area is in risk capital and getting the right models together for getting the resources into these innovative companies. I think that that's a very mature and rich environment for human health. I think it's still emerging in animal health. And I think that, you know, we could really benefit from folks looking at these fundamentals and understanding that there's real opportunity here, not just to do well by the animals and the pet parents, but also to make money along the way. However, it's going to need a larger scale of capital to accomplish than what was done in the past. You know, in the past, you were really repurposing human drugs, so the capital cost was quite low. To be innovative, we're going to have to ratchet that up by an order of magnitude. And I really would like to see more people entering that space from a risk capital standpoint.
It's a hard one to navigate, right? Because it's when you zoom out and risk capital as it relates to animal health, even broaden out beyond companion, it looks a whole lot like human health, has a completely different margin profile than human health. And it's kind of lumped into ag tech at large, which has a completely different investor base, different demand cycles. Figuring all of that out and creating this magnet that draws really smart, informed, long-term capital in, I agree with you. I think it absolutely has to happen.
It does, yeah. And I think one of the things that I like to tell people about is that I've described the regulatory process, but the one thing that you can do in companion animals that you can't do in human health is get access to the patient population for a relatively small amount of investment and experimentation. So as long as you can show in a reasonable number of laboratory animals that this is safe and likely to be efficacious, you can go in and start treating with the consent of the pet parents the animals that are suffering from that disease. And so for me, from an innovation standpoint, knowing that I have a very high likelihood of achieving the end outcome early in the process makes me super excited about spending those other dollars, yes, on manufacturing and regulatory and the other studies, but it's coming with this kind of risk reduction profile. And that's the really exciting thing about it. And I hope more people can appreciate that part of the investment thesis.
A clear call to action from Dr. Todd Zion, the CEO, founder of Acton Biosciences. Todd, thanks so much for spending time with us here on Ag Bioscience.
You're welcome, Mitch. Thanks for the invitation.
And thank you for joining us. You can always get the latest Ag Bioscience news and insights from discussions just like this by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, while you're online, check us out at agrinovisindiana.com. On behalf of the entire Agrinovis team, I'm Mitch Fraser, saying thanks for listening and watching. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovis Indiana, hosted by Mitch Fraser, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez, photography and design by Kaylee Kerr. If you like today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovisindiana.com.